An Evening with the Sladdons, 1916. Part 1.
Two wartime Christmases have passed, and still no sign of the end of the war.
1915 had ended quietly in Badsey, where three of the Sladden sons were on active service. Far away in the eastern Mediterranean, 25-year-old Cyril Sladden, the youngest son, had spent Christmas Day on the island of Lemnos. But he was now back on the Gallipoli Peninsula, helping with the evacuation of Hellas. On the 9th of January, he wrote to his fiancée, Mila Brown Constable.
Dearest, I am afraid my promise went foot completely. The letter I wrote soon after our sudden recall to business lies still in my pocket because there was no post office to take a letter. Now I am back again, after a fortnight, engaged in repeating our efforts of before Christmas. I am writing only an hour or two after reaching camp again. I want to give you news of myself without delay, as I picture you wondering what on earth has happened to me. The more so as we have had an officer killed 3 days ago, whose name in the casualty list will show you that we have been in action a few days hence. Best love, dear. Your ever affectionate, Cyril E. Sladden.
The ill-fated Dardanelles campaign took place on the Gallipoli Peninsula in the Ottoman Empire, modern-day Turkey. In an attempt by the Allied powers to control the sea route from Europe to Russia. With no sign of a breakthrough, the Allies decided to withdraw from Anzac Cove and Suvla Bay in December 1915. The removal of troops from Cape Helles followed in early January 1916. The evacuation was the most successful chapter of a disastrous campaign fought against Turkish forces.
Mila, who was a nurse at the 1st Southern General Hospital in Birmingham, had an inkling of where Cyril might be, even though it was some time before Cyril's letter actually reached her.
My own dear Cyril, I've just been addressing your letters, care of Cox & Co, Alexandria, in case you left Anzac or Suvla, or wherever you were, so I'm hoping you will get these eventually. The latest news I have of you is in a letter dated December 5th. We've had a large convoy in from Gallipoli the other day. They tell us that the 13th Division is at Cape Helles. I was very sorry to hear this. I feel almost certain you are still on the peninsula, although I wish you were anywhere else but there. I must away to duty, dear fellow. Best love, darling. God bless you. Ever your beloved Mila. P.S. In the Times of the 10th, I read that all the troops have left the peninsula, so I suppose I must believe that you really have left that God-forsaken spot.
Cyril had a chance to write in more detail on the 12th of January about the evacuation.
My dearest Mila, it is interesting to read the papers on the subject of our two evacuations. I saw a copy of the News of the World for December the 26th, but that is a rag not worth reading at any time. Father has just sent me a copy of the Observer. It is the first decent appreciation of it that I have yet been able to find. I don't think the general public will ever appreciate it because it was such a brilliant success, and they will never understand the risks of disaster that we ran. I know that preparations were made to deal with tremendous casualties, a point I learned only after we were safely off, fortunately. The enemy was, of course, watching us very closely. In fact, I think they had got wind of it, but probably were ignorant of the date of departure. The day before we went, they gave us the worst bombardment we ever suffered during the 8 months of the whole campaign. It was the nastiest experience I have had since August the 10th. Helles is a vile spot. It was sad to leave so many graves behind. Helles is covered with them. Taken as a whole, the campaign has been a sad failure, but we are glad that the part we were concerned in latterly was entirely successful. Best love, sweetheart, from your most affectionate, Cyril E. Sladden.
31-year-old Arthur Sladden was a doctor with the Royal Army Medical Corps based in Rouen. He had married Mary Williams a few months before the start of the war, and their first daughter, Dorothy Mary, was born in August 1915. Mary and baby were staying at Badsey. Arthur wrote early in the new year.
My dear father, the food parcel was very welcome, and the taste of the Cox's orange apples were quite reminiscent of past Christmas days. The pudding was much appreciated. I'm greatly relieved to think that the Cabinet are not going to dally longer over the recruiting question, and hope matters will be settled quickly and on fair and proper terms. I wonder whether Jack will be called up or not, and if so, what unit he will join. His class, anyway, would hardly come up before April or May. The progress of the military bill is intensely interesting, and it really seems that all but a negligible fraction of the people are awake to requirements. But politics are the party variety. Die hard. I suppose there will be a few local strikes and a few riots. I only hope that the powers that be will be firm and not waver. With love to you all and good wishes for the new year, from your affectionate son, Arthur.
27th of January. The Military Service Act brought conscription into effect for the first time in the war. Every unmarried British male aged 19 to 40 was eligible unless he met certain exceptions. Men could apply for exceptions. Their application would either be considered by a local tribunal, or, in the case of government departments, the department in question would make the decision. Men were allocated into a class connected with the year of their birth and were notified that they would be called up by class.
37-year-old Jack Sladden, the oldest in the family, worked for the civil service in London and was now potentially liable to be called up. However, as an older civil servant, it would be some time, if at all, before the civil service decided to release him. He wrote to his mother, commenting on the bill.
My dear mother, I understand that the Board of Inland Revenue are going to release their men in the first four groups, and so will be going shortly. Quite a number of registrars in the claims branch are in those groups, and I hear that their places are to be taken by women. The debate on the compulsory service bill was very interesting, but the arguments of the anti-compulsionists were very thin. Really, some of these people seem set on giving the government as much trouble as possible and prolonging the war for an indefinite period. With love to all, I remain your affectionate son, John D. Sladden.
George Sladden, the third son, aged almost 30, was with the Civil Service Rifles in the transport section based in France. At the end of November, he surprised everyone by getting engaged to 18-year-old Rosie Lintott, who was just a month older than his youngest sister, Juliet. He was also granted leave in January and wrote to tell his mother of his plans.
My dear mother, it isn't possible for Rosie to get even a day off, so we must be content with a short weekend. We hope to come down on Saturday by the 1:45. Will you see about having a fly ordered to meet us at Evesham, please? Rosie will not have to be on duty till 3 p.m. on Monday, so we shall be able to stay till that morning. Rather remarkable that next Sunday we'll see all your three additional daughters at Badsey together. I'm getting over my ordeal of parade for inspection before Rosie undergoes hers. Tomorrow I'm going to see her mother. The next evening, perhaps an almost more formidable occasion, I have to present myself before the searching eye of my brother-in-law-to-be. If he were 10 years older, I should take the matter very easily, but human boy, age 13, is a very merciless critic. Love to all, from George.
The jury was still out in the family as to whether or not they approved of Rosie. Mila, who was staying at Seaward House, wrote to tell Cyril about the visit.
My own dear sweetheart, George and Rosie are here, and at the present moment have the drawing room to themselves. Ethel and I chased up to meet them yesterday. The train was so crowded and so many khaki-clad figures got out that it was some moments before we found George, blushing like a schoolboy, accompanied by a fairly tall, slight, rather pretty girl, to wit, Rosie. Rosie is so shy that he has to talk for both. It's difficult to tell you whether I like her because she's hardly spoken two words, but I can say this much, that she's a very good-looking girl, with a pretty figure, a nice expression, and not too modern. She's a typically a town girl. George has an eye for the beautiful. She looks about 22, but has not so many interests in life as Juliet, which makes her appear quite a child. I think George is blindly in love with her and very happy. It is charming to see them together, and last night I was very envious of their evening hour together. Kathleen and May have talked a great deal about George's engagement. Strictly between ourselves, they're not very happy about it. Well, dear heart, I must stop scribbling. Do hurry on the war if you can and come home. All my love, best beloved, from your ever devoted Mila.
Arthur wrote to his mother at the end of January.
My dear mother, I expect you enjoyed having George and Rosie with you. It's very nice for him to have such a long leave, and especially as it's given him an early chance to introduce Rosie to you all. It must have been the happiest weekend of his life. I wonder if he had time to show Rosie all the historic points of interest. Where he fell in the brook. The Robert pear trees. The old nursery window, etc. I have been fearfully busy this week, having undertaken to read a paper at short notice before the Rouen Medical Society. The advisor in pathology, Colonel Leishman, was there, and my audience was largely composed of senior officers. I had a rather short time for working up the paper, but plenty of material, as in the last 4 months, I've made nearly 1,500 bacteriological investigations. I think Colonel Leishman was pleased with the work and the results obtained. I've been working independently at a new method of diagnosing typhoid diseases, and he finds my conclusions tally with those he got in other areas. With much love from your son, Arthur.
At the end of January, there was great excitement in Badsey when a telegram arrived from Cyril.
Leave probable. Sladden.
Backed up by a letter the next day to Mila.
Darling, leave is being granted for 1 month's absence from duty to all officers who have been with the Mediterranean Expeditionary Force for over 6 months. So far, so good. In fact, very excellent. But it is likely to be extremely expensive, especially if we are to avoid spending nearly all the time travelling. I have decided it is worthwhile incurring the expense to carry out my suggestion of earlier letters and get married. I don't think I need worry to wonder if you will be agreeable. Of course, from this end, I can fix up nothing about the wedding, particularly as I can't be certain of ever getting home until I am actually there. The date must be always liable to change. Place I must leave to you. Only I want one thing, to have it as quiet as possible, and absolutely no unnecessary expense. I think you share with me the fancy for being married in Badsey Church. I shall not have long at home, 14 days at very most, and about 8 if I'm unlucky, so the wedding will have to be very soon after I get home, if we are to have the best of our time together. I feel so very happy, darling, at the prospect of being with you, but most of all at the prospect of being with my wife. God bless you and prosper this plan of ours. Your most devoted, Cyril E. Sladden.
18-year-old Juliet, the youngest of the Sladden family, was a pupil at the Grove School, Highgate, London. She was very excited at the prospect of Cyril, or Boo, as he was affectionately known, getting leave.
My darling mother, how simply perfect if Boo gets leave. I wonder if there would be the slightest chance of his arriving in England before George goes back. I hope so. If he doesn't, I just hope he won't come till the holidays. For my sake, though, not for yours. I always miss everything at home, and it is hateful to be stuck away up here when people I'm dying to see are at home. There really isn't an atom of news. It is a very ordinary and rather extra dull term, if anything, at present. With much love from your affectionate daughter, Juliet E. Sladden.
But, oh dear, the course of true love never did run smooth. Because of the huge delay in letters being received, Mila was extremely confused as to Cyril's intentions and knew that he would not be up to date as to her own situation. Mila, who had been suffering greatly from varicose veins, was now taking a rest from her nursing job in Birmingham and was living at Seaward House. From time to time, she undertook some private nursing cases for Dr. Leslie. She attempted to explain this to Cyril.
My own dear Cyril, I received your letter dated December 25th and your wire on the same day. For a moment after opening the telegram, I felt as though I should go mad with joy at the prospect of seeing you again. Now I read your letter and I don't know what to think. You see, darling, when you wrote on Christmas Day and asked me if I'd be willing to take the earliest opportunity any leave home would give us to get married, you did not know I had left the hospital, and I've been wondering whether my doing so affects the question of the advisability of us taking the step or not. Although I shall not be earning so regularly, at the same time, I shall earn more nursing private cases. Taking all this into consideration, I'm taking it into my own hands to decide that you will consider our financial position favourable enough for us to marry. So I'm assuming that your telegram meant that you intended me to understand that we should get married while you're at home. I'm going to work quietly at my trousseau, so that if you come home soon, I shall be nearly ready when a wire comes, and will buy things like dresses and hats at the last moment, because they get old-fashioned if I bought them now, and then you didn't get leave. Ever your devoted Mila.
Meanwhile, the rest of the Sladdens were fondly looking forward to a wedding in the family. 34-year-old Kathleen Sladden, who was a teacher in London and lived with her brother Jack in Sydenham, had had some of her siblings to stay. Juliet, known as Betty, and George, who was still on leave and visiting with Rosie. Kathleen wrote to her mother early February.
My dear mother, Betty and Jack and I are usefully employing ourselves letter writing in the dining room after supper, leaving the study free for George and Rosie. I think they have both enjoyed their weekend very much and have seen a great deal of each other. We had a nice evening, talked a good deal, Rosie not joining in much but seeming pleased to listen. George declares that if Boo got home next Saturday, he and Mila must get married on Monday, so that he can be there. I'm very glad and looking forward to getting a day off to come down for it. I wonder if Boo has got his leave. One feels pretty certain of his getting home after his last cable. With love from your affectionate daughter, Kathleen.
Jack and Arthur, too, were optimistic of Cyril getting leave and the prospect of a wedding.
My dear mother, we were quite a large party here from Saturday to Monday. Rosie's very shy, but I expect improves as one gets to know her better. I wonder when Cyril will get his leave. Perhaps the next we hear of him will be that he's on his way home. I suppose the wedding will be very soon after his arrival, as I expect his leave will not be very long. I am still assisting the bank room at the office. The head of the room is off sick, which is unfortunate as the war loans and the reduction in the exemption limit have caused a great deal of extra work. The numbers of people who hold £100, £200 and £300 of that stock is amazing. In a very large number of cases, the investors are working class people. One wonders how they came to put by so much. I don't know exactly how many lady clerks we have now, but I fancy about 30 to 40. I think most of them are getting into the work, though they've not yet had time to become at all proficient. With love to all, I remain your affectionate son, John D. Sladden.
My dear mother, I hope very much that Cyril will turn up soon and that he'll get a reasonably long leave. I'm sure he deserves it. The news of the intended marriage doesn't surprise me, and I'm very pleased to hear about it. I'm sure that they are right not to wait longer, and pre-war precedents are on a different footing. That's what we're all apt to forget, even now. And I know that in Cyril's place, I'd do exactly the same. As it is, I'm glad that ours was a pre-war wedding. But it makes me feel rather antiquated now to think so. Baby must be growing very fast. It speaks well for the home cows, doesn't it? You'll have to give them the DSO. Your affectionate son, Arthur.
Eugenie Sladden, in particular, was looking forward to her son Cyril's homecoming.
My dear Juliet, I expect you enjoyed your weekend at Sydenham. I'm glad you could meet Rosie. She is certainly very quiet, and I don't think we can get to know much of her until she is alone with us. Probably you and Ethel would make her talk more after a bit. I think really she's afraid of Kathleen. That naughty George has never written to me since he left here, and we don't know what day he is coming to say goodbye. His time is short now. We have no further news of Cyril yet. Mila's brother Cecil came down yesterday for one night, and we were able to talk over probable arrangements for her wedding whenever Cyril turns up. We should have liked it to be here, but I think the Brown Constables may prefer to have it in London. With very much love, dear, your loving mother, Eugenie N. Sladden.
But hopes of a winter wedding were soon to be dashed. The truth of the matter was that Cyril had found out that all leave was cancelled, and he expected to be heading east very shortly, as he explained to Mila in a letter of the 6th of February.
My own darling, I wish now I had not cabled and raised your hopes unduly. I am afraid I must disappoint you by telling you not to expect to see me on leave at present after all. At the end of your last letter you say, do hurry on the war if you can and come home. I am afraid I shall have to do the first again before a chance comes of the second. I am anticipating being sent a little further in the direction of your birthplace before very long. I am getting so fat that I am quite disturbed and begin to think I badly need more violent exercise. Here I am pretty busy without being at all strenuously employed. Result that I scaled practically 14 stone yesterday in ordinary uniform. This is about half a stone more than I've ever been before. I can hardly get my Sam Brown belt to meet. At the same time, there is enough sun to burn my face a deep reddish brown, so people who only knew me at home would scarcely recognise me. I like to think of you in the old home at Badsey again for a bit. It is ages since you were there for any length of time. Your ever most devoted, Cyril E. Sladden.
So Mila had to become resigned to waiting. In the latter part of February, she wrote to Cyril, updating him on news in Badsey.
Dear old Boo, it's quite a long time since you heard or read your old familiar nickname. You're still spoken of as Boo at home. Your mother's been in bed about 2 weeks, so the first part of the morning I spend brushing and dusting her room and setting her right for the rest of the day until she gets up. She gave me a message for you this morning. Tell Cyril that I look upon you as a daughter already and let you take a daughter's place. I hope it will not be very long before you really are a daughter. Ethel and May had an awful tussle today. Every wrong little thing they'd done the other, they hurled at each other's head. May kept her head the best, which was to her advantage. Ethel got too blustery. However, a storm generally clears the air, so perhaps they will both be happier now. Ethel cannot do all she undertakes to do. The consequence is that the house duties get neglected. Now that your mother is growing old, she will have to drop some of her good works in the village and do more in the house. The Wilkins twins are still trying to get out of enlisting on the plea that they're growing belladonna and herbs for the government. But I don't think there's much chance of them escaping. Mary is still with us. Eva Stanford has come as nurse to help with baby. At the beginning of the war, she was walking out with one of the Wilkins twins, but when he would not enlist, she threw him over. George Crisp came home, and we never guessed anything until Mary encountered Eva and baby with a military escort on several occasions. The hero got bolder as time went on and used to wait for Eva and baby just outside when he knew they'd be going out. Mr. Musto has taken a great interest in the romance and has come across them, the soldier wheeling the pram, with the happy Eva by his side. Ever your devoted Mila.
Having had a month's leave, George was back in France by the end of February.
My dear mother, I joined the battalion at the place I expected to. I found that they had had rather a rough time since I left. Four of us have a small room at the back of a house kept by an old dame who is an absolute enthusiast in her efforts to make us comfortable. She has a son at the war and makes that her excuse for doing many little kindnesses for us. Refuses, most flatly, to take payment for anything. Sends us in coffee, some of the best I have ever tasted, night and morning, and soup, equally excellent soup, at dinner every day. This battalion has a very good reputation wherever it goes for orderliness and friendly behaviour, and it stands us in good stead. Madame started by saying that there was pas de logement, then went that she could have no truck with soldiers of any kind, and finally, on noticing our badge, conceded that she had un petit place pour des soldats trop gentils. Evidently we have proved ourselves to be très gentils. I have already written one letter, and the others are getting impatient with me. They accuse me of writing love letters. Untrue this time, I'm afraid, for I have not had time this evening. Love to all, from George.
Juliet wrote from school to her mother at the end of February, and Eugenie duly responded the following week.
My darling mother, I'm afraid this snow is bad for you, as you won't be able to get out in it. We have it deeper here than I have ever seen since I have been at school. It is frightfully cold here, and it is very difficult to economise much in coal. Despite the weather, I am glad to say we have not had many colds or influenza here as often as we do in the Easter term. I have had a very bad lot of chilblains this last week, feet and hands as well. But they are recovering now, with the help of some very good stuff which Miss Fletcher has made for us. We are rapidly running out of marmalade and jam. The last lot of marmalade that we shall get until the war is over came in the other day, and we were asked to be as sparing as possible. I shall be sorry when the jam gives out too, as there will be nothing left sweet at all, and I always was rather a sugar baby. I have left out sugar in my tea and coffee. We were not forced to, but we were asked in a sort of way that makes it practically impossible to refuse. I detested it at first, but shall get used to it, I expect. They have cut down our meat a lot. We only have vegetarian dishes for dinner, and for lunch potatoes, pies and vegetable stews, and such things which are not entirely meat. I think no one can say we are not doing our fair share of war economy. In fact, I sometimes think we are doing a bit of somebody else's too. It is so aggravating to make strenuous efforts to economise in all directions, and then to see lots of other people who simply don't seem to be doing anything at all in that line. With much love, little mother, from your affectionate daughter, Juliet E. Sladden.
My dear Juliet, it certainly is cold, and we have not by any means got rid of the snow, as some comes down every day. When Dr. Leslie paid me his last call, he said I could go out the first nice day. I'm still waiting for that day. I did just prowl up and down for a few minutes outside the dining room window on Saturday during a sunny interval, but could not go beyond the shelter of the house as the wind was too cold. I hope that Miss Lacey is not overdoing the economy in the food line. I don't mind how plain it is, but growing girls and girls who are studying hard want sufficient food, I think a good many people are trying to economise, though some don't know quite how to start. The Wilkins twins came before the tribunal on Monday to plead their cause. I don't think they got much sympathy, but we hear that the father was so insolent that he got turned out of the room. There was a parcel for Mila from Port Said, and she opened it on Monday. Dear old Cyril has sent her two lovely embroidered blouse lengths and something for each of you girls. My parcel from Cyril has just arrived, a lovely black scarf all embroidered in silver. I expect I shall have to wait until after the war to have any opportunity to wear such a grand thing. It's so good of the old boy to think of us all. With much love, I am your loving mother, Eugenie N. Sladden.
An Evening with the Sladdens, 1916. The cast was Julius, Anthony Miller, Eugenie, Patsy Miller, Jack, Tony Spinks, May, Ross Davis, Kathleen and Ethel, Sandra Sparrow, Arthur, Chris Smith, George, Robin Neal, Cyril, Terry Sparrow, Juliet, Martha Morrie, Mila, Jane Neal. The narrator was Will Dallimore, and the official voice, Malango Rose Stevens. The director was Maureen Spinks. An Evening with the Sladdens was a Badsey Society production.